This is Farmer D bringing you season two of the Citizen Farmers Podcast, where we are reimagining community through interviews with citizen farmers throughout the country. This season, our goal is to inspire, teach, and connect you to the projects, people, and places that are changing the way we live through regenerative agriculture, conservation, and community development. Are you ready to build a healthier, more connected world? Let's get started. Hey, this is Farmer D with a special Earth Day episode of the Citizen Farmers Podcast, Season 2, Reimagining Communities. My guest today is Evan Marks, the founder and director of the Ecology Center, based in San Juan Capistrano, California. Evan and I are both featured in a new film called Seeding Change that launches on Earth Day. You can check out the film at www.seedingchangefilm.com. And we will put a link in the show notes. The movie follows several inspiring companies like Sambazon, Guayaki, Dr. Bronner's, Patagonia, Numi Tea, The Good Bean, and others, and shows how they are creating healthy products that are regenerating the soil and soul of communities around the world. The film really shows how we citizen farmers can make a big difference by choosing to purchase products that can help support the farmers, companies, and communities who are stewarding land and people in a responsible and regenerative way. Happy Earth Day. All right. This is Farmer D with the Citizen Farmers Podcast. This is season two, Reimagining Communities. Today, I've got my dear friend, collaborator, and citizen farmer extraordinaire, Evan Marks of the Ecology Center. How you doing, Evan?
I'm doing great. Thanks, D. Honored to be here.
Well, psyched to be able to spend some time with you today and dig into the Ecology Center's incredible story and model. I've always been such a big admirer, fan of what you've built over there, and thought it'd be fun to maybe start off and just kind of share a little bit about you and your background and how you kind of got into agriculture and permaculture and community building. Just tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah. You know, I grew up in the place where agriculture has been extinguished, and that's Orange County, California. You know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, my nature experience was the ocean, and I became a surfer when I was young. And by the time I was a teenager, still very much an avid surfer on the daily, started opening up my eyes and picking up trash and volunteering with the Surf Rider Foundation and getting some awareness to our human impact on the ocean. And it was eye-opening. It was, I think, probably changed my life. One of the many transformations that I've had in my journey. And that was one of them. And on that kind of realization of the negative impact we have on the ocean, it was kind of taking that knowledge upstream and realizing that agriculture was the number one source of that pollution globally. So I grew up in a garden as well. My mom's a gardener, mostly ornamentals, but, you know, put me to work, and I enjoyed it being outside, high energy. And I guess I put all those pieces together and, you know, had probably a very similar wake up that you did, Dee. You know, finding our ways into new, unique cultures that were much more grounded to this planet and place than maybe those around us. And, you know, I was one of the few people that was listening to, you know, Grateful Dead or Fish or those types of reggae music in my high school. And that kind of probably helped form the pathways. But yeah, I got into, took me towards farming, and I never turned back.
So do you remember any like particular moments, experiences back then, like dead shows or, you know, just experiences that you had that started to move you in the direction of wanting to work in the field of food and ag?
Well, it wasn't going to a show, but the show, you know, I graduated high school and I didn't, you know, I'm a little younger than you, D, so I didn't have the dead experience live. So I took a pilgrimage to the gorge and kind of central Washington to see fish when I graduated high school. And that was definitely transformational for me, you know, camping show with 30,000 radical people. That was a nice introduction to a new world. And that wasn't the food and agriculture introduction, but it was an alternative reality that I was very interested in. And, you know, the introduction to agriculture for me really came when I started spending time in Santa Cruz. Outside of high school, I ended up in San Diego and knew that I was in the wrong place. And I was fortunate enough to meet some kids in my first couple of years of college in San Diego, where their best buddies lived in Santa Cruz. So we'd go up to Santa Cruz, and I just fell in love with what was happening up there, which was just such a great community and consciousness around, you know, nature and music and food. And it just kind of just got lured in and basically relocated there when I was probably 19 or 20. Just drove up, had a truck, and, you know, and that was about it. Threw my stuff in the back and went up for opportunities and ended up on an organic farm. So that was kind of the opening of the door.
You know, that's funny. I didn't realize we had that in common. So, you know, when I finished my freshman year of college in Madison and I did an apprenticeship on an organic farm, and at the end of that, it was fall, and I was either going to re-enroll in my sophomore year and put up with another winter in Wisconsin. And my best friend, who I met in Israel, is from Seattle, he was at UC Santa Cruz, and he was like, D, I've got this place. It's like a tiny little converted chicken coop on a ranch that I want to rent, but I need a roommate. He's like, you're the only person I could imagine living in a, you know, whatever it was, like 300 square foot chicken coop in the middle of a cow pasture. And I was like, you know what? I'm coming. And I literally packed up my stuff. I didn't go back. I dropped out of school. I drove across the country from Madison to Santa Cruz, and I spent, you know, the next 4 months living with him. And the culture of agriculture in Santa Cruz, it was ground zero for the organic farming movement. I mean, it was like, it is amazing. So that's cool. We both have that kind of window catalyst.
I don't know if it's the same property, but I was living on Western Drive, and this was after I had got my feet on the ground 6 months into Santa Cruz. But I was farming. We were picking strawberries for Meter Street and the little Meter Street organic strawberry patch. It was super fun. Nice. That zone is magical. I know, and it's ground zero for the organic garden and farm movement, I think, since Alan Chadwick brought it there in, what, 1965?
That's right. You know, he was a student of Steiner and that Chadwick garden at UC Santa Cruz. And the CASFIS, you know, UC Santa Cruz agroecology program is, you know, did you do that program?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I got my degree is in agroecology from UC Santa Cruz. I didn't formally do the apprenticeship, but I informally did it. You know, I lived across the street at the top of Western, which is across from the campus there. And I was just a nerd. You know, I drank the Kool-Aid and I was in. I would spend every day at the farm, and I, you know, I'm pretty, you know, outgoing guy. So I just, you know, whether they liked me or not, like I was going to be their friend. I was going to help them out. And, you know, that year, kind of the couple of years that I was there, there wasn't any winter apprentices in general. And so we, the agroecology students, they turned on this winter apprenticeship program that was really rewarding. So yeah, I got a lot of great experiences and worked closely with them through the couple of years I was there.
What years was that?
That was 2000 to 2002 that I was at school there. And I graduated and I ended up staying also in Santa Cruz and farmed for a year at Camp Joy, which was Jim Nelson's a disciple of Alan Chadwick from the 60s as well.
One of my favorite things to do, and I highly recommend this to anybody getting into farming, is I would just go volunteer for a couple of days, you know, at these different farms around Santa Cruz, you know, and just learn, just go, say, I'll do whatever you want. You know, I just want to see how you farm and see what you're doing. And just so always so inspired. And, learned so much just seeing different farms and how they were laid out and what they were growing and how. And Santa Cruz was like heaven, right? Oh, I mean, there were so many amazing farms and projects in and around Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
So tell us about how you went from Santa Cruz, farming in Santa Cruz, and ultimately landing back home in Orange County.
Yeah. You know, that was a 7-year arc, you know, from Santa Cruz back home, maybe a little bit longer. But I don't know. I think it was reading the books of Wade Davis or Terrence McKenna or whatever it was. Like, I was just always enamored by the tropics. You know, I grew up going and surfing in Hawaii. I guess I took a surf trip down to Costa Rica with my good friend Johnny Wilson, who's part of the Ecology Center now as well, and spent a couple months and was so informative. I met some of my best friends on that trip. I don't know if you've had experiences like that, Dee, where it was like, literally that three month trip in Costa Rica, like I met people that literally unlocked the, like, best friends still, like dozen of them that unlocked doors for the next 10 years for me, just randomly, you know?
That's what happens when you travel, you know, and you let the spontaneity and follow your passion. The universe conspires to bring you in, you know, into those relationships.
Yeah. A couple people on that journey, you know, in Costa Rica that ended up bringing me back there for the long term. I can tell a little bit of that story. I know we got a little bit of time, but, you know, Johnny and I were pretty much just hitchhiking down the coast, camping, keeping it low key. I mean, we were just college graduates and not a lot of money, a lot of, you know, big spirit for adventure. We ended up in a hostel in Panama and ran into this incredibly amazing, very tall permaculturalist, Will Elliott. And he'd been living in Costa Rica for about 7 years at that point, maybe 8 years. And he was just on a motorcycle trip and we became best friends. And I ended up pulling Will into a project and we worked together for 7 years down there. You know, just randomly met him in a hostel. And he's a bamboo specialist. So he's a kind of natural building guy, amazing human. I met another guy named Derek Ferguson down there who ended up becoming our client, if you will. He is a landowner down there and he had 1,000 acres of degraded pasture. Met him on that trip as well and planted the seed and said, hey, you know, we're into ecological design and agroecology. Maybe there's an application here in your land. And eventually he invited us back to design his site and spend the next 7 years really building it, putting it to work with Will and about 15 families on the property on the OSA. I also met Stephen Brooks.
Oh, yeah.
And ultimately, he was my invitation back there, is that he, the amazing individual he is, he said, you know, you're into all the right things too. Like, we're buddies, you know, and why don't you come back and teach a permaculture course next year? And that was basically started a run for me. I taught that course with Penny Livingston and there was another one, Brock Dolman. And eventually I became the permaculture teacher at Punta Mona for, it was probably 5 or 6 years, you know, just a good gig. And I would simultaneously jump over to the other side of the country where I was running that large farm operation. And then that turned into, you know, just like you, Dee, we have a lot and so much in common. It's amazing. You know, as the design consultant, I was just pollinating projects, you know, cool eco hotels, eco village communities, small farm operations, you know, just had a blast, you know, spent 7 or plus years doing that in mostly Costa Rica, a little bit dabbled into Panama and Mexico, but loved every bit of it, you know, and then the next, there was another chapter, you know, which was looking for something different. And I took that lead, which was not necessarily Orange County, it was the opposite of Orange County, which actually brought me to Orange County. So the next chapter, I got a series of invitations from the USAID to work in Africa, West Africa. They had a pretty cool farm training program that I felt honored to be a part of. And I would go spend, you know, 3 plus weeks down, and I was in Ghana or Nigeria. Really, really eye-opening, really amazing experiences. And I loved every one of those as well. But that was sort of the wake-up call for me that this international work was very much formative for me and allowed me to cut my teeth and put these ideas to work and see them, these ecosystems and agricultures evolve and do what was meant to be doing, which is connect the people and to the nutrients and the ingredients to sustain them in meaningful ways. But I just didn't feel like my authentic self was going to be anchoring down into West Africa. So I pulled the ripcord and decided that, you know, I needed to dedicate at least another chunk of my life towards something bigger than myself and in a place that was uncomfortable, but yet authentic to me, which was where I came from in Orange County. So definitely a U-turn and a nice pivot for me in my journey.
Wow. What amazing experiences to be able to have spent time farming in such diverse places around the world. And then, you know, to bring it home, I have to give a shout out to Stephen Brooks, who, you know, Stephen and I went to college together. I've known him for 25 years and we both kind of spun off out of college on similar but different journeys. You know, I got into biodynamic farming, stayed in the States. He went to Costa Rica, got into permaculture, and we stayed in touch over the years and stayed connected. And little did we know, not only do we have these parallel paths, but my wife became separately a best friend of Stephen's, and you know, he's at our wedding and we're just so connected to him as like a soul brother. And man, he's influenced a lot of people, you know, and his journey has been an inspiring one. I can't wait to interview him and tell his story because it's profound. And Yeah, so many people that he's touched and so many people that you've touched with him too, and through Punta Mona and the work that goes on there, continues to go on there in a really impactful way. So I've had the blessing of going to that place and experiencing it myself in the last couple of years, and it's just incredible what y'all created there. So you came home.
Yeah.
You came home to Orange County where you grew up, which is, like you said, it's not a place you'd think of like a Santa Cruz or a Costa Rica as far as vibrant food and agriculture scene.
No.
What did you do? Like when you showed back up home, like, did you have a plan? How did you end up at the location you are now? Like,
I mean, this place is so good at consumerism and cul-de-sacs. And I think it was, it was kind of like you would do in any town, is that you would gravitate towards something that felt familiar. There was one organic farm in the county here. Again, we're not talking about a small place. You know, this is 3.5 million people here. It's a really sad statistic. So I went to the one farm I befriended the farmer, and, you know, gruff, classic, big shouldered old farmer, you know, and, I told him a little. I had a vision at that point, and I'd worked on that vision, you know, previously, D, you know, 10 years before that. You know, it was part of my thesis when I graduated college, was designing a community and an education center. I did that work with my mentor, Steve Gleisman. That turned into a community there called the Project in Agroecology Community. So it was just kind of like, I guess I always just got the sense, probably maybe like you and others, where my calling wasn't to be the production farmer, but I was really the pollinator. I was the educator. I was the designer. And I thought an education center could be an important thing. And it was definitely going to be very experimental, considering the geography and the culture surrounding us. You know, I had nothing to lose. So I, met the farmer, ended up telling him about this vision of this kind of cultural center around food and agriculture. But it was a bit more than that. And he said, well, you should go talk to the city. There's an empty farmhouse on the farm, you know, literally an empty farmhouse in a dirt lot that was the front door of this organic farm. And so I did, and spent the next year really trying to put all the pieces together. And by the end of that year and all that hard work, I was able to get the license agreement and the use of the property. And that was 2008.
So a little bit of context to understand it. So why was that house on this farm still there, right? Everything got developed around it. So what was it that was it historic?
Yeah. So this is all the important pieces I forgot, but yeah, this farmhouse was built in 1878. So it's a historic house, the oldest wooden house in this area, on a historic farm. You know, this farm is ultimately 140 years old, and the citizens of this community stand for conservation and culture. It is a very cool little town, San Juan Capistrano, and they decided in 1990, when the Japanese farmer, the Kinoshita family, wanted to retire, that they didn't want to sell this off to development, and they floated a bond. The citizens voted on it, and they protected the farm. So the farm was bought and purchased and protected.
Wow.
In 1990. And so that farmer had been there for, you know, about 20 years at that point when I came along. And then they restored the farmhouse through some grants, and it literally sat empty, restored for 10 years, seeking a greater opportunity for the community. And what we like to think of is that we're the reference point for the next 140 years, which is that we're reconnecting some of the practical skills, but really the infinite possibility of humans working together towards stewardship and health and connectedness for the next many, many generations. And that's what this project seeks to be the model for.
Beautiful. And so it's so important, just to highlight that the citizens and the city having the foresight to protect and preserve one of the last agricultural assets, really, and historic assets in that community, which so easily could have just gone to more suburbia, right?
For sure. I mean, we're seeing our next door neighbor is turning into housing right now. It was a nursery operation that, you know, but yeah, hats off to these guys. Everyone here, we're indebted to them.
Well, you know, it reminds me, you know, you and I have a lot of friends in common and have been kind of connected over the years. And then when I moved to Encinitas for the same story, right? Like the Ecky Ranch was the same story. It was the last farm standing in Encinitas. It has all this history from the 30s when the poinsettia kind of was developed there by the Ecke family. And then, you know, it was kind of the city and the community said, no, we don't want this to get developed. And so they kept it in ag. But then there was like a bit of a void because it was like that old ag didn't really make sense anymore. So what is that new 100-year legacy look like in agriculture in the middle of an urban kind of, you know, suburban, you know, densely populated and somewhat conscious and affluent community? And that's what, kind of how Leash Tag Commons and Coastal Roots was born. And you and I reconnected on collaborating on the farm lab with the school district there that we kind of overlap, which we can talk a bit about. But it's so important, I think, just to point out and highlight that these opportunities like the Ecology Center and Coastal Roots Farm wouldn't be possible if the people before didn't have the foresight and take the action to preserve these last gems of agricultural land where people are. There's not many of those left. And I think one of the things that's so important that you guys are demonstrating is the value when you do that, you've activated it in a way that is so impactful. And we're going to dig into that. But one of the big opportunities is to show, hey, we need to protect and preserve these places quickly, right? We both saw, you saw your neighbor's nursery get turned into housing. When I was at Leash Tag, the neighboring nursery got turned into housing. So it's,
right,
you know, all within a matter of, you know, just a few years. So that's an important piece of, I think, this broader story. But without an activation, without a new vision, right, that agriculture doesn't necessarily thrive. And so what have you done and what are you doing there that's making it relevant and viable?
You know, we spent the first 10 years really on 1 acre building an ecological oasis. And that was that was what we had. And so we made the most of it. And we invited over almost 200,000 participants to our programming. It was really about workshopping. It was transforming the household that everyone has, fortunately, and the schools and the campuses around us into these more conscious ecological settlements and conduits. And so that was for us in a dryland environment, talking a lot about water, you know, rainwater and gray water. There's a lot about talking about just general, you know, kitchen gardening and small, you know, orchard production and composting. And so it was a lot of the homesteading kind of in the 21st century. And then 2 years ago, we were invited by the city to take on the 28-acre operation surrounding that 1 acre. So what we, you know, what has transformed in 2020 was the pivotal year for this community and really our organization around food. Was what the previous model was, a wholesale operation, wholesale organic, grew a few different ingredients per season that would send off to a wholesale packer. What we now have transformed into this, what I call an agroforestry. So there's this strong relationship between tree crops as well as the vegetables that sustain us, the herbs and the flowers that allow us to bring habitat and economy as well. But it's a 28-acre operation. You're gonna love it when you see it. We're on every inch of this farm growing food at about probably 60 varieties of vegetables at a time, all direct to community. So it all goes out the front door. We've got a very dynamic, diverse farm enterprise, kind of a market garden at 20 plus acres, and it all goes right out the front door and or in our CSA. So it's been pretty cool to go from nothing to something, and something significant in the last 2 years.
You know, I remember when you started telling me about this crazy idea to go from a 1 acre educational demonstration epic. I mean, one of the, I point to the Ecology Center, that original 1 acre footprint, all the time to people as like just such an inspiring model of creating an urban oasis for connecting, for building community, and for teaching people of all ages. I mean, the programming you guys did, the design aesthetic, the retail, the events, the education is so rich. And so when you started to tell me, and I've been on boards of nonprofits over the years, and I always get a little nervous when they go beyond kind of the capacity, you know, I mean, taking on a full on 30-acre working farm is a whole different animal, right? And so, but what I've noticed, and I've been following you closely in this, is so gracefully, you guys took this incredible kind of diamond in the rough, really, and shined it off and brought it into the future with this, you know, more polyculture, kind of agroforestry, agricultural practice and approach and design. But also the way you've brought the produce, like you said, from a wholesale model to a direct-to-consumer model. Talk to me a little bit of, so you've grown, and COVID obviously helped kind of illuminate the value of what you were doing in that community. You had the farm stand, you redesigned the farm stand, you really reinvigorated that farm stand in a huge way.
Yeah. The challenge that we're having right now, we just got our regenerative organic certification on Monday, and it's like,
congrats.
You know, we have a 4-year rotation, but we're not doing as much as we'd like on the cover cropping and, you know, the animal integration stuff. So it's just a fun balance to have where ultimately the needs of the community have come so strong in 2020. You know, so we're trying to meet those needs with the highest quality, incredible produce. You know, we went from 75, 12 months ago, dude, we went from 75 in our farm share to over 700.
Oh my God. In 1 year?
Yeah. You know, we had, you know, COVID was, you know, was so rad because everyone in this village, we call it a village, you know, our farm is, everyone rolled up their sleeves. You know, the teachers started washing vegetables. The administrators started planting vegetables. Everyone was packing vegetables. You know, we had hundreds of people, you know, like a concert. It felt like it was the great energy, you know, showing up, rain, shine, you name it. But we had this incredible performance of meeting the needs of the community. When the grocery store shelves were empty, you know, the ecology center was open for business, and we had not just vegetables, but, you know, from our farm, because our, you know, early COVID, our supply was low because we were just getting started. And so we were able to really ramp our production on the farm, but also rescue a lot of our friend farmers in the close proximity here, you know, the Alex Weisers and the Peter Shaners and all these great farmers, the JR Organics, that do great things, but their markets were farmers markets and chef sales. They had nowhere to go. So it really was a collective farm community effort of feeding the people. And yeah, about 1,000 boxes at that point a week, we were packing up and donating over 20% to underserved. And we still have that strong commitment of making sure that we're getting the produce, you know, and building the equity in our community to the best of our ability.
So amazing. It's so amazing how you guys went, scaled up and met the challenge of the time and also have been so entrepreneurial. So tell me a bit more about like the different programs that you're running now, you know, because you've got a lot going on there. You still have the center, you've got the farm stand, school, garden center coming. Paint the picture of kind of the whole vision and, you know, what's activated and what's coming on.
We think of ourselves, what we do is we nourish and engage the community. So in a way, those are the two pillars of our work, nourishment and engagement. And for the first 10 years, it was really an engagement organization. You know, engagement for us is the film nights and the workshops and the farm dinners and the field trips and the festivals. And that was the bread and butter here, like you said, for 10 years. And we had a lot of fun doing it. And then the COVID hit and we had to put all that stuff on hold. And we jumped strictly into really the nourishment endeavor. So that was our whole organization. There's about 60 of us here now, and we're basically trying to meet the needs and nourish our communities. And that's in a few different ways. Like I talked about, our farm shares, our CSA. We have a very robust retail outlet out the front door, and I can talk more about that. But that's another big distribution point. Another in our nourishment category, we have a program called Nourishing Neighbors, where we're donating our basic provisions. So not just delicious organic produce from our farm, but, you know, tortillas and beans and rice from partners of ours, as well as from our farm, and just the provisions to, you know, 100 families a week right now to make sure that no one goes hungry. And these are strategic partnerships. We have another program called Soup Kitchen, where we take a lot of the produce that, you know, has gone through all those channels and there's still surplus, and our culinary team makes soup that we donate to the senior center as well as other communities in need. And It's been a cool endeavor of how do we create no waste? How do we nourish the most amount of people? How do we work as a village to, yeah, live into our values of giving more than we take? So that's kind of our current state. You know, right around the corner, like you mentioned, next month we'll be opening a nursery. So really kind of like permaculture nursery, raised beds, worm bins, seedlings, native plants, bulk compost, tools, books, all that fun stuff.
That's so exciting. You're in such a good place to do it. And you've been doing that work forever. It's just kind of, you're pushing it. Sounds like you're pushing it to the next level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of, you know, that's really, you know, the good news is like that on top of our small farm school for mostly our farmer children, is another part of our programming. And that's a lot of what we're happening right now. And, but we're eager to get back into engaging our community. I think so is our community. You know, strawberries are a big crop here. We got about 4 acres of organic berries right now, and they're all bursting. So we'll build a big taste festival is what we call it, starting in April, and field trips will start ramping up, and hopefully summer we'll get some more food experiences and just kind of think about how we can get back together. I think that's what we're all looking for, is that reconnection. And I'm hoping we can meet the needs and the hopes of the community in that.
And that's something that you've done so well. I've been to a number of your events over the years, the Green Feast and the Makers Markets and the film screenings on the farm. So yeah, I mean, that's that community building kind of and so much culinary program. I know you've got a cookbook, you've had partnerships with all kinds of chefs. Tell me a little bit more. And I think you have some culinary kind of institute, right, in the making?
Yeah, we're working on our culinary center. That's sort of the big flag in the future. It's, you know, realistically still probably 3 years out, given the scale of what the construction needs will be and some of the fundraising. But culinary has been a lot of the DNA for a long time. And part of that is because we saw the behavior change happening with taste. And being in the business of culture shift, wanted to go towards where people are gravitating towards, you know, changing their behaviors and food. You know, we all love it. And so we spent a lot of years in the beginning trying to help change the behavior of the chefs, which was about connecting them to the bioregion, you know, the incredible producers of the bioregion, not just the organic farmers and fruit growers, but the fishermen and a couple of the ranchers, and just starting to connect to, you know, the olive oil producers, and all of the basic needs and everything else in between can be found in our backyard and for sure in your backyard. And so that was sort of the first years that we called the community table accord. And that was like a lot of just kind of mentoring the culinary community that maybe had forgotten about being resourceful and connected to the earth. And that was fulfilling. And how that manifested was a lot of farm dinners. And, you know, as I look out the window of the farmhouse right now, you know, we have a pop-up called Peace Pizza. We make half-baked, these gorgeous organic wood-fired pizzas 2 days a week. So, you know, culinary is just part of the deal. It went from farm dinners originally to now it's like there's pizzas, we're pickling and fermenting all the produce on a regular basis, working towards opening a cafe, D. So that's construction starting shortly on a, you know, nice cafe here, simple coffee, juices, and various other things at the front door of the farm. And eventually, like you said, a culinary center where we'll be able to train up the next generation around food and ultimately give everyone that comes through the farm a really delicious meal with every ingredient from the farm.
Amazing. Yeah. You know, I think the work you've done in the culinary area and helping to, you know, helping chefs and restaurants realize the role they play in the food system and empowering and inspiring them and connecting them and then really celebrating them. I mean, I think I've just seen such a, having been to so many of your events, and the experience of sharing a meal with the community is so powerful. I miss that so much during COVID, but yeah, I think that, you know, that's exciting to hear that you guys are actually, going to have a cafe on site. And, you know, when I think about, you're very humble in the way you describe these things. Cause when I think about like models out there and, you know, pulling off any one of the, you know, half a dozen or more of the kind of programs and enterprises that you have going there, you've managed to pull off so many and continue to kind of pull these rabbits out of the hat and make it look so easy. So it's really inspiring, both as a leader yourself, but also as the way you've kind of brought the community around you and the team that you've built to bring this to fruition. It's really amazing.
Well, thanks. I mean, it is, you know, I think this is all seeking to be, you know, it's all so much bigger than us, and I'm lucky to be playing a part. And at this point, you know, the critical mass of just incredible people here allows all this stuff, all this magic to happen. So it's cool. You know, it was, you know, there's a lot of different energy, you know, input in the early days, you know, we call it the first 10 years and even the last couple, you know, last year was tremendous on all parts, but I think we're rounding a good corner. And the community is responding so well. It's that's the most fulfilling.
Yeah. I mean, it's time. You and I have been at it for decades, but it feels like it's finally a time for this to kind of roll downhill rather than uphill. You know, one of the projects that you and I shared in common when I first, you know, started the farm at Coastal Roots, and the school district next door had said, hey, we want to do a farm here across the street. Can you help us? And we got involved in helping them get the farm going to, and the goal of growing food for the school district, which my kids were in. It was amazing. My kids were coming home eating carrots and cucumbers and lettuce off the salad bar that our team was growing every day. It was one of the most fulfilling projects. So when I know a few years ago when Ecology Center kind of established a presence in Encinitas, which is what, about an hour, maybe a little less from San Juan Capistrano, where your headquarters is, you guys took on a whole nother project to kind of take over the farm lab and bring the educational aspects to the school and continue the production. Talk to me a little bit about how that program's gone. Can you maybe just explain the basic tenets of the program?
You know, when we started dabbling into, Encinitas, and we had a couple other sites, with the Great Park, you remember those. But, you know, that was when we were 1 acre. And so we knew, you know, we were so compressed into that small space with a great appetite for growth. And so we were kind of starting to turn over rocks and see where we could grow. You know, at that point, the vision was this satellite model, which is like a bunch of small sites, you know, these demonstration sites. And when Tim, the superintendent, reached out to us and said, hey, we got X amount of acres, you know, it was originally, you know, it's a 10 acre site, but you know, there was a lot of room for growth there. It was entertaining. And that took us a while to figure out what the right partnership was, but we went down that road, and as you know, we jumped in. I don't know if it's head first. You know, realistically, it's been hard to, even just across the street, it's hard to do so many things, especially when they're not like centered in geography.
Yeah, you get spread out.
So, you know, the first couple of years was a little clunky for us down there. You know, it was just like, well, what are we trying to do down here? And as our vision changed from 1 acre to 20 acres, from engagement to really trying to show up and nourish our community, you know, a lot has changed in that programming. But at the end of the day, what has worked down there is people. You know, we were able to get an incredible farmer down there. Catherine's great. You know, she's so committed. And, you know, get Julie on the school district side, she's so committed. Their partnership is really inspiring. Which is what all of these projects take, is these partnership between strategic organizations with a shared vision and sort of all rowing together. And I think that may have been a little bit of I'm wondering if that was some of the challenges that you guys met, which was, you know, maybe there was a misalignment there. I know there was in the early days with us in that project, but I was just down there a couple of days ago, Dee, but it's so cool to see it really turn on. And we actually have hired a second full-time employee down there, and they're making it happen. And that vision with COVID went from just feeding the school district all of their ingredients for their salad bar, which we do. But now it's really much more about how do we make sure we nourish the neighbor, the community, and not just those in need, which we have been doing through COVID, but really turn that into a hotspot for the local community, sort of like the neighbor Coastal Roots at your project. So it's, you know, it's a cool little neighborhood, as you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fascinating neighborhood. You have the school and the botanic garden and Coastal Roots and Leash Tag and the YMCA. I mean, it's such an interesting little hub. I mean, the thing that the one big kind of thing I loved about Farm Lab is the idea that a school district would prioritize educating their kids about growing food as part of the curriculum and tying that into their STEAM curriculum and making the farm a classroom, a laboratory, right? And then at the same time, teaching those kids about growing food and actually growing food organically for the cafeterias in the schools. You know, usually you see a school garden is kind of more educational. You know, maybe you taste a few things in the garden, but you're not really producing for the cafeteria. Whereas in this model, I really love that the ambition of the school district to say, well, let's allocate our food service budget, and instead of buying off the food distribution truck, let's see if we can grow it here locally in our community and have fresh produce on the salad bars. And, you know, it's such an aspirational model for the country. And it's great that, you know, they found a partner. And it's hard. You know, we took it on. We were startup at Coastal Roots at the time. We were trying to build our own farm across the street, never mind another one. And there's all kinds of politics and bureaucracy when you're in the school district. But it felt good to help them just kind of get that initial lift and get it off the ground. And, you know, and like you said, I mean, I think one of the challenges when you're spread out and also from an organization, there's never a lack of opportunities and need. It's really about staying on mission, being responsible about capacity and resources and where you allocate them towards that mission and, you know, and reevaluating that all the time, right? And kind of making the adjustments as you go.
Yeah, I think on that project too, like I just feel like just recently, D, like just a couple months ago, we figured out what the real purpose was for our bigger vision and mission. And that's also a lesson. You know, sometimes you go into things for various reasons and sometimes they don't end up being in alignment. Sometimes you don't exactly know where the alignment is. So we were always, you know, questioning that with the project, you know, obviously a great project, like really wanted to be a part of the aspirations of the school district, felt like there we could learn something, but didn't really understand how that fit into our big goals. But we recently did, and that's kind of cool. You know, we as an education center want to train up the next generation of farmer. So it's not just farmer, but teacher and chef and, you know, maker and, you know, really build the culture from the ground up.
Citizen farmers.
Yeah. And so we, you know, this year's our first apprenticeship, D. And so we have our apprentices coming, farm apprentices. We have 8 apprentices coming March 1st, which is it March 1st? They're coming on Monday.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyways, coming around the corner this spring and it's 8 apprentices. We had 120 applicants. So it's incredible just the enthusiasm of the youth to want to participate in a program like this. But we selected 8 incredible candidates. But Encinitas now has a purpose because it's really the incubation. You know, our goal with these apprentices isn't just to train them up and say good luck. It's actually to train them up as almost a farm corps and then incubate them as viable farm enterprises throughout this region. And Encinitas becomes the proof of concept there, which is, hey, a strategic partner and a couple of hardworking, talented young farmers, citizen farmers can now build a business, a livelihood, and nourish the community and replicate on that. So that's kind of, it felt good, you know, like if Encinitas is proof of concept and prototype can work, you know, in 10 years, we'll have 10 more farms and they won't necessarily have to be ours. It's really just about building the capacity where, you know, we went from this being the last and only to this being the first of a generation of farms in this region. And that's kind of our bigger arc here. And so it all starts to plug in into a meaningful puzzle that has presented itself in just the recent past.
That's great. That's great to hear. That's so exciting. That is, you know, you're seeing more and more of these awesome projects, farm projects, community farms, agri-hoods, urban farms, ecology center type initiatives, college farm, you know, and there's not enough talent out there to, you know, we help hire for a lot of our clients. And it's one of the biggest challenges is finding people with the experience and the right kind of personality and character and, you know, abilities to step into these dynamic projects and roles. There needs to be more training centers, educational centers to not just farmers, but educators, like you said, organizational experience and the integration across, you know, your cafe and your school and your market and your business and your nonprofit, right? There's so many hats and roles.
Yeah.
It's not just, I think there's a misconception oftentimes that, you know, you hire one farmer and it's a done deal. It's, you know, these projects are so much more dynamic.
For sure.
Have the potential, right, to be so much more impactful when you and you're creating all these amazing jobs. You know, you're feeding community, you're creating these jobs and you're helping people on so many levels. I'm curious, you know, from your amazing breadth of experience and building the Ecology Center and, you know, having tentacles into numbers of other projects. We didn't dig into them, but you and I have had some interesting little explorations into some agri-hoods and other ventures. What advice would you give, you know, a city, an NGO, a nonprofit, an entrepreneur like yourself that's saying, man, this is amazing what they've done. It's so overwhelming to think about how do you put all the pieces together to build something like you've built, right? What advice would you give to some aspiring citizen farmer or citizen, you know, city person sitting in government or in philanthropy or in academia, wherever they are, to say, here's some steps you could take, some things you could do to start to plant the seed of something like the Ecology Center in their community?
Gosh, that's a good question. I think it's, you know, it's funny. I don't even know if I know the answer to that. I think I'd love to brainstorm that with you. But I did, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I have a friend. He's in the development business. He runs a big company, and you know, we don't work with them or for them, but just saying, hey, you know what? This is a checklist of things that you might want to think about when you're exploring your projects from building a community. And you know these ideas, but I just gave him just a quick 2-minute brainstorm. I said, you know, when you're thinking about it, let's, you know, we're talking about everything from, you know, what's got to think about water in this climate, you know, how are we going to be managing and reusing water? You know, what is our landscaping looking and feeling like from native to edible? You know, what is our building material and, you know, energy usage? What is our, you know, the community scale objectives and opportunities for connectedness and nourishment, you know, from a community garden to a small farm, to a farmer's market, to a farm stand, to a maker space, to like, well, all these things. I'd like to ask you that question, Dee. Like, I only kind of know from the entrepreneurial lens that I have, you know, which is, you know, like you do this work, yeah, you know, so much, you know, in such a different aperture, you know, in such a broad range for so many different clients. Like, what advice do you give?
I love that you turned it around on me. I mean, I think you're so right on in that, you know, you're saying this checklist of things to be looking at and almost in an order of, you know, understanding. I look at it kind of two ways. I think you have to understand the land, the water, the soils, the geography, the history, the ecology, there's so many aspects, right, around a place. And so there's that piece, and there's a long checklist of things to really understand and explore and begin to see where the opportunities are, where the constraints are, what's, you know, what are all those sensitivities that you have to look at. And it starts with water. And then there's the people piece, the social piece of it, and an economic side of it, which is really, what are the goals? Like, what are your intentions? What are you trying to do, right? What is this want to be? And those things are not really separated, right? Because I think when you can bring the assets and the aspects of place with the aspects and assets of the people that are trying to bring something forth, it's about the values and goals and, you know, the integrity. And so much to me is in the approach. And I think when you approach these things with that kind of complex viewpoint, looking holistically at these things together, and really taking the time and having, and what I admire so much about the Ecology Center and what you've done is you've taken this long view and you've taken the time to build community, to get yourself even in the position to begin to nourish community. You spent 10 years building that relationship and that team and the place that could allow you to move into this next phase. And you're doing it with such great intention. And so I think that is a big part of it, you know.
It's definitely not formulaic, you know, I think, and you probably see that in your projects. I mean, this is hard work, you know. It's just reimagining a future for a city, for a neighborhood, for a household, and hopefully beyond. But it's like, you know, I guess I love the process of design, but it isn't, you know, there's some orientation, like I said, observation, and maybe even some checklists to think about, but it's complex, you know. It's like it's complex, and it takes a lot of different skill sets and a lot of good intention. I think that may be a good summary for me, which is, let's, you know, where I'm. I have a friend that pulled me into a project. Funny enough, it's a school in Baltimore, and they want to do some cool stuff. And you know, first thing I said is, just let's go build a design committee. Go find some, you know, ecologists, go find, get some students, go get some of your faculty, go, you know, go do, get all this diverse perspective, the landscape architects, you name it, and put them all together and start designing. And maybe that feels sincere as a starting place.
I love that. It's well, you know, it makes me think of two big kind of themes here. One is what you just hit on, which is the design process itself is such a dynamic process. It doesn't happen in a silo. It happens in community. And a lot of the best design happens when the right people of diverse perspectives are all engaged in the conversation and the visioning. And I did some work with eco districts out of Portland, kind of did some of their trainings, and they have a really beautiful model for like community involvement, focused around equity, designing for everybody. And I think that piece of it's huge. So I kind of put in one bucket how you approach a project, how you approach design. We could have a whole hour just talking about that easily. The other piece to me that I find, it's like as good as the design is, and it needs to be good, and it needs to be bought into by the right, quote, stakeholders, but it's only as good as the culture and the team that implements it. Because, you know, it's like hardware and software. It's like bones and like everything that goes around the bones. You know, it's like you can't just have a good design. You have to have good culture. You have to have good people. You have to have good programs. That's the magic, right? And that's living, breathing, always in your, every day you show up, you're dealing with something in that realm. And that's not something you can just kind of put in a report and say, here you go. That's something that you build as, you know, over time.
And in comparison, it's easy to make a beautiful picture, you know?
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that it's easy, but in comparison, you know, doing the, actually getting into living into these ideas, is, like you said, the community, the culture.
You know, I interviewed Travis from the Intervale a while back, and I've always been really fascinated by the simplicity of their, what they do, but yet the complexity behind it, and how 30 plus years of building relationships and systems have evolved into this, you know, really wonderful model. That's been kind of like the UC Santa Cruz program. It's been one of the like real kind of pioneering models for the farm incubator side of what we do. And I feel like you guys are similar, like the Ecology Center, I think is, you know, organically become, I think, one of these on the same level, kind of one of these models. And so much of the complexities of what you're doing, it's so hard to put a finger on it, you know, and there's so much beneath the layers of the onion, you know, as you peel it back further and further. And I just, it's inspiring, and it's motivating to see, you know, something as complex as what you guys have going on, all the different enterprises and programs, and it's so well thought out and so well executed. But I know that on the inside how many challenges you've had to go through to get there and continue to go through to get there and to keep it there. So I think a lot of times, you know, we've gotten in this romantic world of everybody sees just what they see on a social media post and everything looks perfect and everybody's striving for just like the picture perfect thing. I think the real essence of this is in the relationships and the way we run organizations and the way we build community. And it's not in a design. It's in the culture.
Well, I would, you know, and I can be vulnerable here too. You know, the first 10 years for me, D, was really the entrepreneur pushing hard on that design, you know, and the design for me is very iterative. So I never really am that interested in a big master plan, even though it's fun to go into that space. I like to think in layers, like you said, the onion. And that the site eventually, things manifest as they should. It unveils as the needs are presented and the opportunities and observations are connected. But, you know, the first 10 years for me was really about, it was a muscle of, I wouldn't say just straight brute force, but it was a lot, you know, a lot of pushing. And I feel like the last, you know, for sure the last 6 and 9 months for me has been a turning, partly of the critical mass of just incredible people I have around me. But it was a little bit of a, you know, stopping for a second and didn't have that luxury, you know, when you're doing this work, sometimes we work hard and didn't able to reflect as much as I'd like to and be present and ground myself. And, but I have had that luxury lately and try to hold on to that every day. And, you know, really the culture and the community and the values that we want to live every day are already, like you said, the most important piece for us. And I guess I'm just going to be honest that maybe they weren't always, you know, as present as they should have been. Doesn't mean that this was, you know, any compromise of them. It was just that it wasn't the light, you know, it wasn't what we were all paying attention to.
It's like cultivating soil, you know, it doesn't start out perfect. It takes many, many years to get it right. And it's hard to really put your finger on what it is. And you just keep adding compost. And that's us. I mean, that's us as humans, you know, we're always growing and getting better at what we do. And I think with that humility, we're able to get better faster. And so, yeah, man, I appreciate so much everything that you've shared and really grateful for our relationship as a friend, as a thought partner, as just like an inspirational citizen farmer and fellow entrepreneur.
I'm inspired by you.
No, thanks, man. So for people to find out more about your work, how do they find you?
Yeah, we've got a website, the organization, The Ecology Center. So there's a there is a movement of ecology centers, and that's the good news. It started in the 70s, and they're all over the country. The first one, to my recollection, is in Berkeley, and it's called Ecology Center. So without the. They do great work in a very different capacity, which is recycling and farmers markets and really important system-based stuff. We're like the new kid on the block. And yeah, check out our website, theecologycenter.org. And I think that's, you know, we're on Instagram with the same handle, The Ecology Center, and the other channels and such. But yeah, I think if you ever get the chance, we invite you to the farm, because that's where the magic really is felt. I think we're all less enchanted by the bright, shiny picture that we see on social media. But when we can get into the feelings and the experiential state is when things start to connect and make sense. And so hopefully many of your listeners will be able to come visit at some point.
Yeah, I definitely highly recommend following their work on Instagram and social, just to see the amazing work and the amazing content that you guys share is really, really good stuff for people that you can use at home. And also, yeah, if you're ever in San Juan Capistrano or just in Orange County in Southern California, make it your stop, hit the farm stand, check out the farm, try to jump into one of their events. I can't wait to get back out there, man, and see the growth. Every time I come, it's just like all these new amazing things are sprouting. So
hopefully this summer.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, brother. Thanks for taking the time. Love to the family.
Stay strong. We're all in this together. We got a one seed at a time, right?
That's right. Join the Citizen Farmers community. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook. For more information, check out today's show notes. This podcast is co-produced by Ben Bernstein. Our audio editor is Sarah Milligan. Thanks for listening to Season 2 of the Citizen Farmers Podcast, where we are reimagining community to create a healthier, more connected world. Do you care about the health of people and the planet? Connect with the Citizen Farmers movement to grow healthy food, build your community, and give back to the earth through actions big or small. Follow us on Instagram or sign up for our newsletter at citizenfarmers.org. To learn more about our work at FarmerD, designing and building vibrant farm-based communities, visit us at farmerd.com. Thanks for listening.